Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the RCL Foods Annual Results Conference. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to the CEO, Mr. Miles Daly. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining the RCL Foods year-end 30th of June results. Again, if you could turn to page three, there's been a number of major financial impacts on our results, and we'll discuss these later in Rob's section. But I think the best way to look at our underlying performance is EBITDA on a pre-basis, and on that basis, we're down 12.8% on prior year, including the impact of the drought on sugar and the oversupply and the crisis that we have in the chicken industry. If you exclude chicken and sugar from our results, our EBITDA is in fact up 12.4%. So we're comfortable that sugar will normalize over the next few years, but we do have concerns with chicken, and we'll talk a bit more about that later in Scott's section, and we are evaluating options to change our business model. And we'll also pick up on the performance highlights a bit later in the presentation. If you could go to slide four, becoming one RCL Foods, this has been a major amount of work that's taken place in this area over the last year. And although the transformation journey will continue for a few more years, we really do think we've made major strides in transforming into one RCL Foods. This was our first year running with the three divisions as opposed to the four companies that we had. And in the last 6 months, we've rolled out our corporate brand to almost all of our 20,000 people, which is a significant task in itself. And as you know, we're running a transformation management office, or TMO as we call it, and that has steered work streams to create the necessary systems and processes to enable us to function as one company. And as you'll appreciate, there's an enormous amount of admin and task work related that has to happen in order to function as one company as opposed to four companies. And then importantly, leveraging the synergies and opportunities that exist in one company. So a lot of good work has taken place there. If you turn to slide five, moving towards a more balanced portfolio, our focus, as you know, is on accelerating growth in the higher margin added value categories, and growth in our grocery category is clear evidence of the success that we've had in this regard, and we'll pick up on some of the specifics a little bit later. So groceries are our single biggest EBITDA contributor, 30%. Clearly the percentage contribution is exacerbated by the massive challenges facing sugar and chicken, and as you can see together, they were only 22% of our EBITDA. But as I said, those will normalize from a sugar point of view, and chicken, we need to do something very different. If you turn to slide six, our main performance drivers, as I mentioned, the impact of sugar and chicken should not detract from the good performance of the balance of the business. And the revenue growth of 13% and EBITDA growth of 12.4%, I think is a pleasing performance in the current environment. And if you look at it by category, which we have below there, groceries in particular achieved strong results, driven by sound pricing strategy, effective marketing and promotional activities, or as we say, brilliant basics, and there was a 20% EBITDA growth. Logistics also had a solid year with a 26% EBITDA growth. And again, Scott will pick up the underlying drivers behind the grocery category in his presentation. If you turn to slide number seven, growth through strong brands, I think the work done in our grocery brands has been a highlight, with a focus largely on the marketing and customer brilliant basics, and an increase in marketing investment. We made a significant increase in our marketing investment, which we held in spite of the challenges faced by chicken and sugar. Now, I'll not talk through this slide in terms of the shares because Scott will go through that. If we go to the next slide, slide eight, which is partner with strategic customers, another area where we're making really good headway is in the partnering with strategic customers. We've added new customers to our mix in Starbucks and Burger King and McDonald's. We've broadened our range, which includes specialty desserts, breads, mayonnaise, dressings, and other sauces and sugars. So a lot of good work happening there, and 80 million rands more revenue and more to come. And then we've also moved to one customer director and sales team for the consumer and sugar and milling business. So we have one customer director and sales team sitting for both of those parts of our business. And this has strengthened our major customer relationships and the strategic top-to-top interactions that we have. Now, RCL Foods is now usually a top three supplier to any of the major retailers or wholesalers in South Africa. And so the conversation shifts very much to how do we grow our businesses together, which is really a good place to be in as opposed to just talking about price. We also have a dedicated RCL Foods key account person for each of the major retailer and wholesalers. So we're very integrated now in our business planning and leveraging our skill set across the whole of RCL Foods' brands. If you turn to slide 9, which is extend our leading value chain, we made some significant investments again during this year, 1 billion rand worth of capex. And we've made some really big investments in our logistics division, 325 million in our route to market. And this positions us well for future growth. We've increased our average pallet positions in Cape Town and Durban by about 40 to 50%. So we're quite excited about the opportunities that exist in that space. We've also invested 127 million in the UHT Macau plant, and that we've just launched this month a shelf stable, smooth Macau, and all indications, although it's early days, are very good. We've also invested 123 million in a new pet food plant, and that's going to give us an opportunity for future innovation, which will only come on stream at the end of 2017. We've also done an enormous amount of work in enhancing and integrating our IT systems from a disparate info into an integrated solution. Some examples, providing a single consumer platform, fully leveraging Vector's order-to-cash process. We put EPOL and Molotech feed integration proposal to the board, and that's been agreed. EPOL and Molotech together now is a 6 billion rand division for us. That's a big business and big opportunity. We want to integrate that properly. We've implemented max costing and profitability into the speciality and power businesses, and that's giving us a much better understanding of what the cost of and customer profitabilities are, and some of the improvements in EBITDA as a result of those insights. We've also introduced the Let's Talk group intranet. That's now live for every single PC user, over 4,500 people. If you turn to slide 10, Africa development. We continue to be cautious in Africa, and it's consistent with previous discussions that we've had with you. But we've given you, try to give you a different perspective of our business in Africa. If you look at all of the operations that we either have a share in or own, we now have revenue in excess of about 2 billion rand. Clearly, a lot of that is sugar and our share of RSSC, but hopefully gives you a better perspective of what we're doing outside of South Africa. Rob will talk to the Zamchick and Zamhatch put options and what that means for us. If you turn to slide 11, inspire great people. This is a key part of our strategic thrust. And a major highlight has been the rollout of our corporate brand and passion across the business, as I mentioned earlier, to nearly all of our 20,000 employees. We've also prepared the foundation for our culture. We call it Our Way, so we have our passion and our way that will enable us to have a competitive advantage in a way that strategy alone cannot. So Peter Drucker once said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I think at the heart of that is something we believe firmly in, is that business is all about people and organizing people in a proper value system and culture that they enjoy and inspires them. If you turn to slide 12, to drive a sustainable business, there's more to drive a sustainable business than just sustainability. It's what will we do in 10 to 20 years from now? What will that look like? Can we continue to operate the way we do now? Or will we have an Uber or an Airbnb competitor that changes our world completely? And how do we embrace the circular economy? And we're also looking at areas such as nano and biotechnology where we really have an opportunity to do some game changing. But I'd like to stress this is what happens in 10 to 20 years, but I wanted you to get a sense that we're thinking about more than just sustainability. But if you look more immediately, we're doing some really good work in identifying how best we can use our current resources. So particularly energy, if you ignore the commercial implications for a moment and just think about it conceptually, we could actually provide energy for the group ourselves from our chicken and sugar operations. So just to give you a sense of some of the thinking that we're applying. And then something practical that we've actually done already is our waste-to-value plant is under construction in Worcester, and energy produced from post-processing wastewater will power the adjacent speciality plant. So to give you a sense of maybe some of the stats there, we're essentially processing energy into processing wastewater from the chicken processing into energy using biogas. And the energy generated by this waste-to-value plant will do about 30% of the total demand it's a demand reduction in our carbon footprint of 11,000 tonnes and a cost saving of about 3 million rand per annum. So a lot of good work taking place there. If you turn to slide 13, which is the key deliverables for 2017, I think our key focus areas for 2017 are fairly self-explanatory, so I won't go through them, other than to say that the key theme coming through is that chicken requires a thorough review. We cannot continue with the status quo. And we're very excited about the opportunities that exist in our grocery business, and we'll continue to invest heavily in that area. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to Rob.
Thank you, Miles, and good morning, everyone. I'm going to land on slide 15, and it's just a summary of all of our results for the period. And it's there for your reading, and I'm not going to go through the detail, and the subsequent slides will do their job. But just to highlight off this slide, Miles has made reference to it again, but we consistently report on a pre-IAS 39 basis, which, as a reminder, means we exclude the unrealized profits and losses on the financial instruments that we use in our commodity procurement. And as such, our statutory results, which we are obliged to publish, give one perspective. We believe a truer perspective is what we've got at the bottom of that chart, which strips out those impacts, and you can see the impact in this year was such that it's reduced our statutory reported earnings and different from last year. So year on year, we've got a nearly 190 million rand swing, so it shows you the materiality of that impact. And as such, our underlying results, as we report, have gone backwards by that 12.8% from an EBITDA perspective and margin backwards by 1.6%. I'm not going to touch on slide 16. It's context that you're well familiar with, so I'll go over to slide 17. And here's a graphical representation of our results, the waterfall going from our EBITDA that I've just spoken to down to our published headline earnings reference. And you can see the significant contributors to that result. Firstly, to highlight the impairment, I'll talk to the context for it in a subsequent slide, but that's represented in that depreciation, amortization, and impairment column in the current year, contributing 642 million to that total, so a significant movement from the previous year. It reverses clearly in the subsequent green block where we added back on the headline adjustment perspective, and that's contributing to that big 587 million balance. The other point to highlight only on this chart is the taxation impact, and there's two significant contributors there, and so we've had a positive tax effect in the current year, but largely driven by the release of the 163 million rand provision we were carrying, dating back to the acquisition of Food Corp and some uncertain tax issues that we inherited and have since resolved. As well as then obviously on the impairment, there's a non-deductible aspect to the goodwill component of that impairment, meaning that the see-through effective tax rate is 30.1%, which is what would be a normal reflection. Moving on to slide 18, we've highlighted obviously, and all of our reporting there now is on the new segmental definition of consumer, sugar, milling, and logistics, away from the four statutory entities that we've previously published under, and appropriately we've inserted and included comparatives that obviously were not available previously. The milling impairment, it's important to understand the context for this, and it really goes to the last bullet in terms of saying that in terms of accounting requirements, we are obliged to define the CGU, the cash generating units, done at a milling level, which because of the more challenged kind of competitor environment and the forward cash flow reference, as well as the WACC having been driven up, has translated to an impairment charge for the current year. But no such requirements would have to have been booked had we been able to define the CGU at a mill bake level, which, as you know, we've explained is how we're running that business at the moment. It's a single business unit of the milling and baking put together. And certainly at a Food Corp level, if, you know, when we bought Food Corp, if anything, the underlying valuations that are the output of these tests that we're obliged to do at a total Food Corp level is looking like significantly more headroom than we had when we acquired the business. So it really is an accounting requirement. It is a very material number, obviously, but obviously a net non-cash flow impact that has translated through our EPS that we've published this period. I've spoken to the release of the tax relating to what we inherited from Food Corp, and obviously itself at 18.9 cents is also a significant impact on our HEPS. On to slide 19, spoken about the IAS adjustment and the material impact that that's had on this year. Let me spend a few moments on the Zambian put option. The translation of that obviously is itself very material in terms of the impact on our results for this period. But essentially the context for it is that in the, back in March, prior to the expiry of those puts, there was a three-year term to them, and we took a decision as a board to exercise them, quite comfortable with the consequence of either being paid out in shares or cash. Shares would have meant that we would have elevated our exposure to the Zambian business to a holding company level, the listed company level, which we felt was more appropriate than being restricted in the sense that only having exposure at the JV level to the chicken ventures. But the other consequence of it being paid out in cash is not something we're uncomfortable with either. So in the intervening period, the Zambia's board has put an announcement out which is yet to be voted on by their shareholders. That only takes place on the 9th of September, where their intention is through raising a capital injection from the CDC to pay us out in cash. The translation of that from an accounting perspective is the numbers that you've seen quoted there, with a net 67 million rand profit on this disposal being recorded, and a higher impact in terms of our headline earnings impact. And the difference is essentially that by virtue of the rand over the period of the investment having strengthened against the kwacha, we've been carrying an FCTR that needed to recycle through the income statement as a consequence of the disposal. And as such, again, we have fairly material impacts translating on, from an accounting perspective on this put option. The cash we will receive is no later than the 23rd of September in the order of $23 million. And then a final note on Mutungir, we had reported that at interim as well in terms of our decision not to proceed with that project in Mozambique, and there was a trailing amount of $13 million that we needed to book in this financial period. I'm not going to spend any time on slides 20 and 21. They're really there for your reference and show the comparative new presented segments of information, both revenue and EBITDA. The MDs will detail and talk to the performance on the underlying. But you can see both the consumer obviously attributed to the chicken and the sugar volumes affected by the drought within the sugar and milling piece, how the overall results have been affected. But slide 22, and Miles has highlighted this already, really demonstrates this impact, that if you exclude those two components, and we are acknowledging that they are material contributors to our overall group, you get to a very different picture, and that is that the balance of the business and the group has grown by that 12.4%. So, you know, the shortfall versus last year just in chicken and sugar alone is 430 million. It's a significant number, and obviously something that is of concern and receiving management attention, but you get a very different picture if you exclude those components. Going across to slide 23, and the chart below just demonstrates that with the exception of logistics, it's been a tough second 6 months across the other two divisions, and for all the reasons that we've explained already. Slide 24 is just a summary of the cash flow movements, and obviously our starting point of being 31% behind is attributable to the tough operational performance out of the business. But I think then the balance of the cash flow elements I'll deal with on subsequent slides, but doesn't present a concerning picture at all. Slide 25 is some detail on our working capital, and the first section there dealing with the movements of our working capital and similar to last year is a net positive. I will obviously concede that the biological asset movement is an accounting issue and distorts the picture slightly, but even if you look at the individual components and the major drivers there of trade receivables and inventory, we don't have any fundamental concerns. the receivables and balances and movement is a significant one in terms of $465 million, but that's largely attributable to the new revenue and third-party principals that Vector have taken on. And remembering the context here, and you see it when we express it as a percentage of revenue, is that Vector's revenue we only record is the distribution revenue that they earn, but they are carrying the full book and in some instances the stock balance associated with that balance, that business. So the see-through of it is yes, it's up and is affected by a cutoff, but the collection risk is not something that we are concerned about. Today's reference, and this is quite a crude metric that we've included there because it talks to the balance of the total group revenue and cost of sales reference, but it does give you some perspective. And we're very comfortable with the underlying risk associated with this, and that it's been a well-managed area, and that today's and overall collection is sound. From the inventories perspective, it's showing a further investment in inventories, and I called a positive comment to that and said I think it's a good result in the context of the situation that we've been trading in. So the drought has had a significant impact on an import program for us, substituting what would otherwise have been easily and readily available materials. So there's a longer lead time associated with importing maize, for instance. And then just generally commodity prices are significantly up versus the prior year. So that drives that investment. And so only having $179 million invested from our cash into a stock balance at the end of the period, I think is a good result overall. Slide 26 and 27 deal with our debt package situation. And we're 2 years now into this new package. And I think the finance cost chart at the bottom best demonstrates what that's done for our world. So the volatility we had when we were on the hook for Food Corp's bonds previously and their exposure to the euro, you could see had a significant impact in 2014, and we've moderated that significantly, obviously, in terms of both the size of the package that we put in place, but also then in terms of the hedging program that we've entered into to take away that volatility. And with the increasing interest rates that we've seen over the past year, it's obviously proved to be a very valuable effort on our part. And the ultimate test for us is on slide 27 in terms of how we're able to meet our covenants. And so there's a very comfortable amount of headroom on all the measures that we have in that regard. So it doesn't demand any further comment. My last slide just deals with the CapEx, and Miles has already spoken to it in terms of the individual contributors to what we've spent in the last year. The bias has gone towards the growth parts of our business and in consumer with the beverage and pet food investments, and then within Vector, three sites having seen a significant amount of investment. So we're investing in the right parts of the business, and on a forward commitment view, you can see that we're being prudent as well in terms of the difficult times that we're facing at the moment. So the commitment levels going forward are lower than what we had in previous years. And that's all for me, so I'm going to hand over to Scott.
Thanks, Rob. Moving on to slide 30. The consumer division is certainly a story of two halves, and to the extent that we have both chicken and groceries in the division, we should see the 19% EBITDA decline in consumer in the context of the fact that chicken on its own was a 62% decline in EBITDA. So moving on to slide 31 then, if we have a look at those two halves, the chicken industry, as Miles said, is in a crisis deeper than what it's ever been before. And RCL Chicken is obviously not exempt from it, although we obviously do have a good chunk of quick service restaurant business and added value in our chicken business. The good half of consumer is that in the areas in which the outcome was strongly in our control, our grocery brands have powered ahead with a nearly 20% growth in EBITDA, and that's after the investment of some 30 to 40 extra million in marketing in that groceries area, so I had to cover that cost as well. And that's been a function of volume growth, focused cost control, and very disciplined pricing strategy. But let's move on to the troubled area then, which is chicken in slide 32. As I said, the chicken industry is in an unprecedented crisis. If you look on the right-hand side, the top chart of the imports of total chicken, most of that is leg quarters, by the way. And certainly in the last 4 months, the quantities of imported chicken at 80-odd thousand tons per month is way in excess of what Rainbow sells to the retail wholesale industry in total in chicken. And so imports have certainly become one of the biggest players in the chicken industry in South Africa from only a couple of thousand tons some 8 years ago. Feed costs have also spiked, and as you can see, the maize price on the bottom right-hand chart over the last couple of years to new highs, and oversupply has prevented manufacturers from recovering cost pushes. So the imports creating oversupply, the feed costs are rising, and in fact, it is a fact that IQF prices at the moment are at least 2 or 3 rand lower per kilo than what they were last year, and that on the back of big feed price increases that precipitated the crisis. Obviously, any business can't go on in that precarious situation, and so we have put quite a lot of energy into designing a substantial change to our chicken business model going forward. The last point on that slide is that we continue to support government in the implementation of the brining cap for all of the reasons that we've spoken about around the protection of South African consumers in their greatest area of protein consumption and knowing what they're buying. And therefore, we're gearing up to switch over in late October to the new capped brine levels that government regulators make effect. Moving on to slide 33 then, if we look at our added value part of our chicken business, our retail added value brand being Rainbow Simply Chicken has come under considerable pressure as a result of high price increases, but most grocery categories in South Africa are under considerable pressure with big squeeze happening in the economy as it is at the moment. In response to that, we're launching some affordable value innovations to take advantage of some of the lower cost ingredients that we have access to, which will allow us to pitch similar products into the market at lower cost. And pleasingly on food solutions, despite the economic squeeze, overall food solutions growth is still there at some 3 or 4% in volume. And so the tough times have been shielded by them opening new stores. And we continue to hold our share of our food solutions customers, and this in an environment where most competitors of ours are now trying to win some food solutions business as it remains one of the last bastions of profitability in the chicken industry. Moving in on to the good news story within consumer groceries. Groceries had an exceptional year due to Brilliant Basics implementation. And when I say Brilliant Basics, that's not a self-evaluation, that's an industry term to describe getting in place some very sharp basics and winning at the point of sale. And we're also beginning some of our innovation now and marketing investment in our brands. And so what we saw there, if you look at the chart on the right-hand side, at the top of the right-hand side, our volume growth for the balance of our business outside of chicken at 10.1% for our financial year against the overall market for food, which is at -0.5%. So we're very pleased with that start, and it certainly looks like it's carrying on into this financial. If you look at some of the specifics of that, the bottom right-hand side there, we became the mayonnaise market share, growing some 8-odd percentage points in market share on and off for the last 6 months. And this against a brand like Cross & Blackwell, which is a traditional market leader, that has had a very, very powerful and position alone as a market leader for decades. So we're very pleased that we're able to challenge the market leadership of that. And if we move over to slide 34, similar efforts have meant that Yum Yum Peanut Butter managed to hold on to market share. And if you look at the final period of the financial, which is in the flash there on the right-hand top, you'll see that Yum Yum is now at 30.7% market share in the June reading, up from 29% a couple of years ago. Important for us is our pet food business. And you will know that we launched Canine Cuisine into the premium side of the pips of the supermarket pet food business. That's where most of the growth is coming from, premium brands in the vet channel as well as premium brands in the supermarket channel. And that's where most of the margin is as well, and the future action will happen in the pet food industry as it is now. And Canine Cuisine, which we launched only a couple of years ago, grew from 4.3% a year ago for the 12 months to 8.8%. And our most recent reading for Canine Cuisine is actually over 12% market share. We're very pleased. We've taken on another very strong market leader in pedigree and taken all of that share from them. That has resulted in our overall dry dog food share being pushed from 24.4 to 27, And in the latest read, we're a little bit up on that as well. And then Omar, we relaunched singles, individually wrapped singles. Some of you will know that if you open a box of Omar rusks, if you don't eat them all in one sitting, they can get a bit soggy at the end. And so we wrapped them individually for freshness. It's an additional launch of ours. We lost some share over the winter period because Pioneer were aggressive with their price, having lost a lot of share the year before. As you can see here in June of this year, we're back up to 57%. And so overall in groceries, we've had brilliant volumes and good cost control and a very pleasing end result. We're moving on to our beverage category then in slide 36. We performed really well from a profit point of view. The smooth offering of ours, which is our more recent premium offering, grew by 39%, and the result of that mix impact on our profitability was very strong. So we just launched, you'll see that photograph bottom right there, there's an end that was taken last week, that photo was taken in the supermarket. We just launched our shelf-stable Macheo, number one. And we anticipate that this will lead to the market what shelf-stable milks did to the milk market, which is add a lot more volume and allow people to pantry load and without taking up fridge space. Moving on to slide 37, the story with pies when we last spoke was that it was about stabilizing our pie business and turning it around, getting it back to volume growth. And I can safely say that we have stabilized the pie business unit as a result of extensive brand renovation, focus on delivering better quality offering to the consumer. We put more meat into our pie, and that has positioned us nicely for growth of our quality segment. We've also launched in the second bullet point there our Mighty Fine range, and already we see ourselves being 30-40% of what the market leader in the baked frozen sector is doing in most of the stores. And we've had a significant focus on cost containment, and I'm happy to say that our pies certainly have much better prospects now than what they had a year ago. And then my last slide is slide 38, which is about our specialty business. One of the highlights within a very strong grocery portfolio was our specialty business, which we do primarily with Woolworths. We seek to be Woolworths' most admired supplier. We are their biggest food supplier as well. And we've had exciting innovation and seen some very strong volume growth within the Woolworths group. And we're very pleased with that. We've also been able to use some of the skills we've developed there to win some of the business in the QSR areas. So in Nando's, we make most of their desserts now, and in Starbucks, we make the whole range of foods in the early openings of the Starbucks stores, which will develop into good volumes as they extend their franchise. And so overall, as I said, we need a new path forward on chicken, and we will continue to grow on grocery. It's been a good start to the financial year and predict that we'll build on that success. And with that, I'll hand over to John.
Thanks, Scott, and good morning, everyone. If we can turn to slide 40, my presentation includes Sugar, which is a Salati brand, Milling and Baking, Supreme and Sunbake, and Animal Feeds, the Molotech and Epol brands. Revenue was marginally up, while EBITDA down by 20%. The main factors that contributed to that negative performance was the drought, which affected both sugar and the animal feed sectors, and the operational channels we had at the Benoni Bakery, as well as the raw material costs, which impacted on both baking and milling. If we turn to slide 41, this gives us a bit more detail in terms of where our problems were. Animal feed came in slightly down in terms of EBITDA, mainly due to the lower internal volumes. You heard earlier from Scott the pressure on the poultry sector, and that impacted on our internal feeds section. The drought also impacted on our raw material costs, pushing up the price of both maize and the imported materials that we had to use in producing the feed. And in terms of Millbake, obviously our EBITDA was down by 10.4%. This was even with an improved and good result out of our rural bakeries and a packed result out of milling. And the main reason for this poor performance was in our Gauteng bakeries, and we had to work on a turnaround plan to improve the situation both at Benoni and Boostra. We recommissioned our Boostra bakery which gave us an opportunity to fix the problems at Benoni. Fortunately, that has proved that at positive in terms of turnaround. We've got less wastages now out of the baking industry, and I'll come back to that when I talk a bit more about mill bake. Sugar results was our big negative impact, and that was really due to the results, due to the drought, and the results in lower volumes in terms of the sugar production. Moving on to slide 42, which talks to the animal feed section. EBITDA declined by 2 million, 2.7%. And as I've mentioned, this was due to the lower internal volumes. The combination of EPOL and Molitech will prove significantly, has helped the animal feeds business and mitigated our risk, because we now got a larger, more balanced feed company. The lower EBITDA was also due to high cost of raw materials, particularly maize. But there are also some positives that come out of the animal feed section. A more balanced feed company, as mentioned already. It was also a record year for our Militech division, and that could have been even better had we not been constrained in terms of the raw materials, both molasses and fiber, as a result of the drought in the sugar sector. And we have a far greater focus now on the value-added products, and we are starting to get some value out of that that focus. Moving on to slide 43, which talks to the mill-based operation. EBITDA was down by 10%, and that was due to, as mentioned earlier, operation issues at Benoni, and also the competitive environment in this particular sector. We had very high commodity prices, and we also had financially stressed consumers. So this put the Millbank operations under significant pressure. Margins remained below where we would require them to be, and this is still management focus to improve this. Moving on to slide 44, the sugar review. EBITDA was down 42%. Crop depth was down by 5,000 tons due to the ongoing drought. We had irrigation restrictions of up to 80% in our cane growing areas, and dam levels dropped to about 38% on a weighted average basis. So that put us under significant pressure from about the middle of last year. We continue to focus on removing costs both at the operational and at the industry levels. And this will come through in the next financial year. The one thing I'd like to mention here is that even with rains coming on, it will have impact. This impact will carry on into 2018 before we can fully recover within the sugar industry. Probabilities of rain are looking reasonably good for our summer months, and so we're expecting that we can start turning the business around shortly. Looking further at sugar, I think that with the reduction in the industry crop, this resulted in switching off all exports to try and service the domestic market. This also put further pressure on us as we moved more sugar into the South African market, into the industrial sector, which has generally lower margins, and we are obviously having to focus on that and try and see whether we can improve those margins going forward. There was a pleasing market share gain in terms of sugar. We actually had record sales in terms of sugar, and we now represent about 51.1% of the total manufacturer's share of sugar within the South African context. Robert's already mentioned, but we closed out on the Mossendier project, and I think that's all from the Sugar and Milling Division. And over to you, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks, John. If we turn to page 47 and look at the logistics headlines, we see a reasonable revenue growth of 5.5% to 1.9 billion rand. And that, coupled with sound cost control, led to a pleasing profitability performance at an EBITDA level of 26.4% or 260 million rand. Probably a bit flattering, because if we exclude the impact of the industrial strike action in the comparative period in F15, that growth would moderate to 15%, but still a solid performance. During the year, we also had, Miles and Rob already alluded to it, new capacity commissioned, and I'll talk to that in subsequent slides. Pleasingly, stability in our labour force, given that we had a big hit in F15 of $20 million, and we signed a three-year wage agreement in June 2016. And I'll talk to the group projects initiated in a subsequent slide. Turning to slide 48, as I said earlier, solid EBITDA growth off the back of sound cost control and simplification of our customer network. And what we mean by that, if you cast your eye down to the bottom of the page, to the little graphic or picture that says changes to customer landscape better down, in our food service network, we had the exit of Compass, which just didn't suit our network, and our subsequent network is much more simplified, or more simplified, and leads to efficiencies, which we've had a benefit. That, together with the robust performance of the food service industry for us, really helped some of the headwinds we were facing in the retail space. And then we've spoken about the cost control initiatives, and we really focused on our big campus at Midrand and some pleasing results and cost control and efficiencies taken out of that facility during the year. Turning to page 49, just looking at the route to market investments that we've spoken about earlier. So during last year, July 2015, we commissioned PE, a brand new greenfield facility in the Cooker area. And then in Peninsula, we went live with almost doubling our capacity, as Miles said earlier, in January this year. And in the next week or two, we're going live with nearly doubling our capacity in our KZN facility in Tukwini. The operational performance, despite some of the challenging volume decline that we've had, specifically around poultry, or driven by poultry in particular, we have enhanced service levels, a focus on the inbound supply chain from suppliers, so making sure we have the right stock, and then the focus on the inventory holding, which leads to improved working capital management and releases capacity, some pleasing improvement in the operational performance. Then if we turn to slide 50, we spoke about some of the group route to market initiatives. And one of the big initiatives we did during the year, the financial year, was consolidate the old Rainbow Food Corp and TSB businesses from a number of different service providers into one RCL food sales and merchandising structure, a team of over 1,200 strong, and that supports the group's drive, as Scott said earlier, on the brilliant basics down to store level. We also, in June 2016, completed an ambient distribution solution for groceries at our Rantantine facility, and that's going well. We're busy with a massive SAP rollback, Miles already alluded to it, in order to cache so we can see one-stop number and better manage group inventory, which is key. So a lot of work happening in the group space. They culminated after a lot of scoping work into five key work streams with 23 major projects identified, and we'll be busy with those over the next 2 to 3 years with the above ones already implemented or underway. And with that, over to you, Miles.
Thank you, Chris. If we can turn to slide 52, which is the prospects. We're very comfortable with our strategy. We've made major strides in creating one RCL Foods, and this will continue. We will continue to look at the opportunities that the TMO office has identified, so enabling projects to enable us to deliver on one RCL Foods, the synergies and the opportunities that have already been identified. There's about 40 major work streams on the go. So that's going to continue over the next 3 to 5 years. And in spite of the economic conditions, we'll continue to invest behind the grocery brands. Scott has touched on some of the innovation and opportunities that exist, and we'll continue to drive that hard. We're very excited about that. And we'll also look at better value offerings for the consumer, because in these tough times, One needs to position new opportunities differently, so a lot of work taking place there. Sugar will recover, but as John said, the impact of the drought will still be felt in 2017, and we really need the rains this year to make sure it's not worse than that into the future years. But chicken does require a thorough review, and we're in the process of doing that. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star and then 2 to remove yourself from the queue. Again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 now. Our first question is from Des Meyers of AfriFocus Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys, and pretty decent performance considering the pressures that you've had in sugar and chicken. If I can ask a question on the chicken side first, if I may, it appears that on the after the first half, the EBITDA was down about 15%, which tells me if I look at the second 6 months, you've moved from what was still quite a reasonable profit in the second 6 months of last year into quite a substantial loss in the second half of the current year, which means that there's been a swing, a dramatic swing, it looks like, of a little bit over 200 million, or quite a decent profit into a loss, and I fully understand the reasons behind that. Just to try and highlight a little bit further for me, if we had to break up the second 6 months, that's the period from January through to June, in the March quarter, was there still a reasonable profit, and did you swing into the much bigger loss in the June quarter, just to get a feel for how we are going forward?
There's it's Rob here.
Hi, Rob.
I'll respond to that question. It has been a situation of an escalating problem. So if you remember, the first 6 months, we made a comment that we were enjoying the benefit for that period of better port procurement positions. In the second 6 months, we were obliged to be buying in the marketplace at those higher levels. So we had the feed cost pressure, and then the ICS market and pricing really hit the skids in the back end of the financial year. So it did get worse and worse as the months went by, and to be plain, we're not out of the woods yet. The environment is pretty similar as we stand right now.
Okay. Thanks, Rob. I think that clarifies it. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 now.
Chris, we have quite a few questions on the webcast, so I'm going to start with some of those, if that's okay?
That's fine. We have no questions in the queue at the moment.
Okay, so we have quite a few here, starting with Chetan Naidu from Capricorn Fund Managers. His first question is, how have the recent rains affected sugar crops? Has it been sufficient to replenish soil and moisture quality affected by the drought?
Okay, fine. Thanks. I'll respond to that, Chetan. The rains really fell in the KwaZulu-Natal area on the coastal belt. So from an industry perspective, I think that crop is slightly up, but will recover as a result of those rains. What I can say is that we had very little rain in the low felt, which is where our sugar estates are based, and the drought continued and the dry conditions continued in that area. So the dry conditions will continue to impact on yields going into it, but looking to next year, it's difficult to say at this stage whether we're going to get the rain in summer. We're hoping, and the indicators are positive there, and that would lead to somewhat recovery for at least the last quarter for our production. But at this stage, the sugar industry has increased its crops very slightly, but it's still a negative impact on the low crop.
Okay, John, there's a part two to that question. Could you provide us with your view on sugar pricing ahead, given the global balance slightly tilting into deficit recently?
Yes, I think that the all indications and the fundamentals are pointing to higher world market prices. And I think that what will happen is that the local prices will probably follow the world market prices up slightly. But there's a lot of other dynamics that play into their pricing arrangement. But I think you could say that they would follow the world market price of that.
Okay, I'm going to continue. So we have quite a few questions from Jiten Dishu at Avio Capital. The first question is, please can you tell us what the percentage price and volume movement year on year was on chicken for full year 2016?
Hi, Jason, it's Scott here. So obviously we have our two halves of our chicken business. We have the foods solutions area and we have the retail area. And I think I'll talk mainly to the retail area. Obviously volumes are down. We have downspaced wherever we can to avoid having to sell what we call consequential, which is primarily accurate at the industry margins that are currently being experienced. So, you know, we downspaced roughly 10% for the year. And then price, overall, prices have really gone sideways in the last few months. ITF prices are well below what they were last year by at least a couple of rand a kilo.
Okay, next question. Do you think it is inevitable that chicken losses will be materially larger in H1 2017?
Justin, that's another question of yours. Scott here again. The simple answer to that is without any government intervention, yes. The answer is yes.
Do you think sugar volumes will be similar in the new year or up slightly?
I think it's very difficult to forecast because a lot of it hinges on whether we get rain in summer. But I think the bottom line is that at this stage is likely to be slightly down looking at the crop.
Okay, staying with Jiten, what were the SA fair value gains or losses for TSD?
Jiten, it's Rob here, and the detail is in the full announcement. It wasn't a material impact on the period. It's only 5 million rand. But the underlying that there are two components as you might anticipate. The first being that the rootstock and cane itself, the physical was challenged, so that would have been a write down component. But it was offset and to the extent of then being a 5 million positive impact in terms of the pricing in the marketplace. So the reference in terms of the sugar pricing has buoyed that. So it's not a material number on our results. But it is a function of those two factors.
Okay, and the last question from him, is there a rough timeline of the EU bone-in tariff increase application?
It's in Scott Jarrigan. The rough timeline in terms of the determination that we understand is September or October. We're assuming that will be immediate, but there may be a phase-in period.
Chris, over to you. If there's any more on the audio line?
We have no further questions on the queue at the moment. My apologies, we do have a question from Timmy McCluntley of Coronation Fund Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, gents. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us this morning. I think, Scott, the first question would be to you on the chicken business, just trying to understand the environment in H1 of this year. So you mentioned answering the 10th question, without any government intervention, losses would continue. Is that inclusive or exclusive of what's going to happen on the brining side?
So it's just a line on H1. We're talking H1 in our financials, so for the 6 months to December.
Yeah, what are we doing now?
The answer was excluding the brining impact. That's a separate issue.
All right, so your anticipation is that brining will come in October, and so H1 should be better than H2 16.
H1 should be better than H2. We don't anticipate for RCL that brining will affect us negatively. In fact, I think it will affect us positively because we brine less than the competition.
All right, perfect. Thanks for that. And then my second question would be to Chris on the vector side. Just thinking about the ambient facility that you have now got set up for Food Corp, what do you think that will do for the current business in terms of farming in some of that cost, and what does it do for your revenue in that business?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. We really do ambient in our portfolio for food service, and then on retail we focus primarily on frozen. So we are set up primarily as a frozen network. With the group projects and scoping, we are identifying where it makes sense for us to bring that in-house or into group, and we'll put up the required facilities because we do have space in a lot of our hubs to do that, or we use outside service providers. So it's a bit of an open-ended answer, sorry. We'll do what's appropriate as we get to each area of the business. But we will, the direction of Vector is the group route to market solution, and ideally we'll bring as much in-house as we can. But it doesn't always mean we'll do it ourselves.
All right, great. Thanks, Chris. That does give some context. And then my final question will be again to Scott on the consumer side, specifically on Millbreak. Can you give us a sense of what milling profits were and what baking profits were in that EBIT number? I'm trying to get a sense of really how bad milling is versus baking.
No, Lieutenant Rob, yeah, we don't disclose, sorry, the trivia, we don't disclose that split out. Since we've merged those two businesses, the profitability consequence is a single view for us, which is obviously trying to resolve the flour through to the bread side, so it only is published as a single reference.
Okay, I'll then ask a follow-up question on that, Rob. In both your maize business and your wheat business, are volumes up in both commodities?
No, they are slightly down in both.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from Jose Rahube of Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just a quick question in terms of the chicken business. If you could elaborate further in terms of your new business model. I'm aware that previously you were looking to, or rather you did actually reduce your exposure in IKF. I mean, I'm sitting here trying to think what more can you do in order to remedy the situation within chicken.
Hi, Horty. It's Scott here. Yeah, you know, we have done quite a bit of work, but we're not ready for any detail on that yet.
Okay.
Thank you. We have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments, sir?
We still have a few on the web, Chris. So the next one is from Devon Govender, Equities First. On slide 28, what is the 13% CapEx spend on group projects? Can you give me a little more color on this?
It's Rob now. I'll respond to that. It largely relates to some of the integration projects that we're running through the TMO office. So it's largely system-related and enabling investments for the new One RCL Foods. So that long project list that Miles referenced that we're pursuing, that gets run out of the center.
Question 8 on my side. Victor Sini, Cajiso Asset Management. What new types of... Oh, sorry, I missed that part. Sorry, Devin had part two. Is chicken imports due to import deals from the U.S.? What are the anticipated impacts? Chicken tax. Okay, we'll come to that.
Devin, in terms of your question about chicken imports from the U.S., very little, in fact. Not the entire U.S. quota wasn't even used, and that's got to do with the very large size of the portions and the fact that the quality is not actually up to scratch, despite what the Americans said in the press. And so the increase in imports have come from the EU and another swing to Brazil. And just to give you some context about that, because of the closure of Russia to chicken imports from the West, and China building their own industry, there are very few places for leg quarters to go other than Africa. And South Africa is the only really unprotected African country of scale. And so exporters have become price takers, which means they'll take whatever price they can get. And that's why there is a surge of leg quarters in South Africa, despite the fact that the rand has halved in value and hasn't changed the dynamic of that at all. We're double what we were. And if there were any further tariffs, my guess is that exporters would reduce their prices to compensate for that, again, being price takers.
Okay, thanks, Devin.
And that's why the chicken industry is in an unprecedented crisis, because of a little bit of tariffs will work.
And the last part of that question, what are the anticipated impacts of sugar tax? Are there plans to do an empowerment deal?
Okay, on the first part of the question, is John here. The sugar tax, I think that's we've had a look at it. It may have a slight impact in terms of the volume sold, but the indication from where sugar taxes have been put in place elsewhere in the world seems to indicate that there's not a major impact on volumes and on the sales of sugar. So in terms of the impact on us, I think there might be a small volume impact, but that may well be offset at this stage because of the higher export prices or the world market prices. So bottom line is I don't think it will have a major impact on us. And the second part of that question, are there plans to do an empowerment deal? There are no plans in place now to do any of those top deals. Thank you.
Question 8, Victor Cini, Cogito Asset Management. What new types of products within the group will the logistics division begin distributing? Okay, and the second part, Chris, what percentage of the total group's products do you envisage logistics distributing over time?
Okay, thank you, Victor. It's Chris here. I'll answer that. The products that the old Food Corp and TSB Sugar business bought are all in the ambient space, so it makes sense that we would grow in the ambient space. And as I said earlier, with Tumi's question, we will grow that as appropriate. Either ourselves or do it with external service providers. Currently, we have about a 50-50 split of group, the logistics division, group business, to external parties business. And we'll continue to grow probably in a similar ratio because while we're trying to grow or are growing the group side of the route to market and distribution solutions, similarly we're doing that with external customers. So a lot of activity around customer models for pick and pay, some of the big retailers on the radar screen at the moment. So we envisage it staying pretty much the same ratio.
Next question is from Cirilo, Sanlam Investments. I would expect prices for chicken to decline given the latest increase in the supply. Why hasn't the consumer got a decline in prices?
Scott here. The prices in the second half of our financial were significantly lower than the first half, where we saw some price growth. And so, yes, the excessive supply has created a decline in price. As I mentioned to you, IKEA prices for us are now 2 to 3 rand a kilogram below what they were last year this time. But on average for the year, our price on chicken has gone sideways. And bear in mind, our total chicken price is a function not only of IQS, but the other subcategories where we've experienced a price growth. But IQS is certainly down in the last 6 months versus where it was last year this time.
Harvey Lowe, Stonehage Fleming, you mentioned that the chicken business is undergoing a review. Can you shed some color on your thinking? Are you planning to reduce production capacity? If so, what kind of capacity reduction can be expected?
Miles here. Scott answered this to an extent earlier, but maybe just to recap. Scott and team have already done an enormous amount on the chicken business model, and we've seen some good gains there. However, imports continue unabated, and when we say imports, let's be clear that product is dumped. And as Scott indicated, Russia and China have largely reduced imports, and therefore Africa is really the only destination, and South Africa a very good destination, given the scale of our industry. As you know, it's about a 30 billion rand a year industry, and bone-in product is the favorite. So the only way to stop dumped products, quite frankly, is through quotas. In the absence of that, the chicken industry is suffering and faces an unprecedented crisis. We can't say more about our plans at this point, but in the absence of a level playing field, and we're not inefficient, and so, you know, we've said before, we're not looking for any protection, we're just looking for product not to be dumped, and we're happy then to compete with whoever comes here. We do need to do something dramatically differently, but we can't share with you at this point exactly what that is. We're still formulating a number of options in this regard. Thank you.
Okay, we are 4 minutes past the hour. Chris, one last check on your side on the audio.
We have no questions in the queue.
Okay, so I'm going to take the last one on my side, which is made up of three parts, and John, you can pick up the first part. Simul C. Raj from SBG Securities. Does TSB expect any government intervention on SA sugar pricing?
Thanks, Simul. This is John here. There is a government intervention in the form of a tariff, which has worked very well. You will have known that the imports of sugar have declined over the last 2 years from record highs previously. In our view, the tariff is working, in fact, we don't believe that government will remove the tariff and at this stage or change it in any way. I think that's what's in place at the moment. Rob, you were going to answer the second part of the question.
Yeah, so the second part is, when are lower new season maize prices expected to positively affect the chicken business?
It's Rob here. Samuel, it's only anticipated that we'll enjoy those in the back end of the financial year. Obviously, we've got to see through this new summer crop, and it's light on the sugar side needs to rain. So there's every indication that we will get a better crop and that planting intentions are up. With the higher pricing, we'll encourage that. But the forward markets are our best reference in terms of what we're likely to expect. And the March contracts, the May contracts, are trading around 2,600 rand a ton. So it's already indicating a better crop coming at us. So that's 600-700 rand a ton better than spot. And obviously it's closer to the levels that we would have paid in the prior financial. So we're going to look through a period where year on year prices are going to be much higher, and we'll only start seeing that relief when that new crop comes in March, April next year.
And the last part of that question, what exactly is going wrong at the Benoni Bakery, John?
All right, thank you. If you can recall, we actually invested in a new oven in this Benoni Bakery more than a year ago now. During the commissioning of that new oven, we had a lot of problems with the conveyor packing systems. And the damages were extremely high. We were running damages in excess of 15% in that bakery, and there were significant returns. So it was having an impact on our quality. So that's what went wrong there, and we needed to shut the bakery down to really get to sorting out the technical problems in that bakery. So by recommissioning and producing at Booster in Pretoria, we were able to reduce the damages significantly in the last quarter, and we reduced the returns and we improved quality in terms of the bread. Volumes, as a result, are starting to climb again. We're starting to get some of our lost customers back in terms of the baking business. We are busy now with fixing the technical problems in Benoni, and that capacity will be utilized to shore up some of our other bakeries that have production constraints at this stage. So it's all looking very good in the baking space. Thank you.
That's the last of the questions on the web. Over to you, Chris. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Darren, do you have any closing comments?
No, just to say thank you very much for everyone for dialing in. We appreciate your interest and support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.